This is Rebecca Lowe, or Rebecca Lua, if you listen to Suboptimal Radio, and you are listening to Men in Blazers on the NBC Sports Network.
It's unbelievable!
From the Embassy Row studios, in the crap part of Soho, it's the Men in Blazers podcast, Rog.
Women's World Cup podcast-ish.
Well, frankly, it's been a lot of sport the last few days, Rog. I love my sport, and I'm not sure you've ever heard me say this.
It's been an order.
There has been almost too much sport over the last few
days. Oddly, no Premier League, Dave.
Yeah.
But despite that, it was bonkers this weekend from a sporting perspective.
Yeah.
All that football.
Yeah.
The tennis.
Oh, tennis was amazing.
The NBA.
Yeah.
Stanley Cup. I only watch that because Jeremy Roenick makes us watch it.
Told you to go and do it.
Yeah.
They had two huge horse races,
the Belmont.
Rog. Triple Crown for American Pharoah, Rog. And the Derby in England, Rog. Another big horse race.
At times, I've got to tell you, for little Rog, whose brain is pea-sized.
Yeah.
Everything just started to blur into one. I felt like I'd spent Saturday watching Luis Suarez ride American Pharoah to victory.
Yeah.
On AstroTurf.
In Canada.
In Canada.
In Canada, yeah.
Why, American Pharoah. Clapping.
Yeah.
Clapping, Davey. Were you a racing fan growing up in England?
Horse racing, yeah. I've always loved, particularly flat racing. Didn't like the jumps.
I love the jumps. I grew up on a racetrack in England.
Yeah.
We used to go, when I was 12, a huge number, 12 onwards of my weekends, Saturdays, was spent in the local bookmakers.
Yeah.
With a pack of boys, all of us. It was like, we were 12, we looked about 8 or 9.
Uh-huh.
It was like a seedy bookies that was packed with a clientele that was kind of like half molesters on day release, half like a cast of extras from Peaky Blinders. And we'd make these tiny, tiny bets of pocket money we put on every race. And we'd send up Jamie, my big mate, the biggest one of a lot of us, with all of our tiny bets to the counter to make the bets. And he picture a kind of Liverpool Jewish boy who looked a bit like Big Mike from The Blind Side. We'd send him up to the betting slip. The betting window was like 32, kind of like 50p, 50 cents bets.
Yeah.
And one Saturday, to our horror, I still remember this, we just arrived, 12, 13, 14 of us, like 11, 12-year-old little boys in a bookmaker's pack full of old men smoking cigarettes. And the door, both doors blew open. And it was my mate Richie's mum who'd seen us go in. And she just screamed on the top of her voice. To my dying day, I remember the noise. She just goes, "Richard, get out!" And she stormed over, grabbed him by the ear, pulled him out of the bookmakers. And like suddenly everyone, all these old leering men were looking at us at the back, these like 8, 9, 10 little kids. And we didn't know what to do. And we all just instinctively just slapped our hands together, looked at each other and said, "Wives, eh?"
Because you knew so much about it.
Wives. And they all just nodded in our prepubescent squeaky voices. We're like, "Wives, eh?" And they were just like, "Yeah, tell me about it. Tell me about
and
it."
And that
mate.
Was the end of your career in horse racing, Rog.
So I know I met some new friends. Mates I've still got to this stage.
Yeah, there's Memorial as well, the golf tournament, Swedish Open. So much great sport this weekend.
And the NBA.
Couldn't really keep up. Oh, the NBA.
LeBron James.
Yeah.
The American Pharaoh of basketball players.
He really is, Rog.
39 points.
Yeah.
16 rebounds.
Mm-hmm.
But we've got to ask the big question everyone's asking.
Uh-huh.
What the hell's he doing with his hair?
Yeah, I know. He's got some hair stuff going on, but he might just be about to carry his team single-handedly to the NBA title, Rog.
I don't understand. It's easier to say which sectors he still has hair in, David.
Yeah.
He looks like he's taken a photograph of Marouane Chamakh.
Yeah.
Or even worse, Prince Ali.
Yeah.
Into his barber. Uh-huh. And said, "Make it look like Prince Ali from FIFA."
Mm-hmm.
This is a man who makes an estimated $72 million a year, Dave.
Yeah.
I don't understand it. That is the best he can do.
He could be seeing Wayne Rooney's guy, Rog.
Yeah, or he could have stuck with a headband. Stick with what works.
Yeah.
Bigger headbands.
Mm-hmm.
JW said he should wear a bigger headband and just keep pushing it further and further back.
That's a good move.
Or two, listen to me, LeBron, because I know you listen. GFOP, LeBron James. LeBron James. Shave it off. Shave it off. Shave it off. Well, does that just make the Michael Jordan comparisons too excruciating?
I think he's a man who does quite well with Michael Jordan comparisons. Probably the only basketball player who does well with Michael Jordan comparisons.
As a bald to a fellow bald.
Yeah.
Let it go. Not to sound too Queen Elsa. Let it go. Let it go. Let it go.
Wow.
Talking about NBA greats.
Yeah.
Luke Longley pod, our NBA special.
Oh, Rog.
We've got it. We released it. It's out there. a hero of mine. I've never been so nervous with a guest because I admire Luke Longley.
That's amazing.
The great ball. And I'll just say, as a trailer, when I asked him for the best piece of advice he ever learnt from Michael Jordan, he said, "There's always a place for humour, even in the most intense competitive brain on the planet. Humour is the great equaliser." And his life advice, I'll just tell you this, David, because it's still
haunting
me.
Life advice.
Still haunting me.
Yeah.
Luke Longley, Chicago Bull, how is he not in the Hall of Fame?
Yeah.
He said, he didn't have to think twice. He just goes, yeah, life advice. He said, it's the things that don't get said that do the most damage. Mind's blown.
Wow, that is mind's blown. That's also so Australian.
Oh, it's so dark.
Yeah.
I've spent the past 24 hours since I spoke to him naked in a little paranoid ball in the corner of my own bedroom.
Yeah.
Terrified. Talking about great, great men.
Yeah.
Ferris Bueller, David.
30th anniversary, Rog.
Since the actual day off.
Yeah.
On Friday, Arriaga 2, at Random Walk 76, tweeted in, at Men in Blazers, Ferris Bueller took his famous day off 30 years ago today. Shouldn't this be a national holiday?
Yeah, one of your favourite movies of all time.
Not yours.
Rog. No, I do love it also. I love the film. I've got to watch it again. I feel like I've gone a good 10 years since I last watched that movie.
I watch it every month. It is the lifeblood. It is the lifeblood. I'll just say, if you watch that movie in 1980s Liverpool, you move to Chicago quicker than you pass Go in Monopoly.
Mm-hmm.
You watch that movie with your mouth agog. Ferris Bueller, when I first saw it, Dave, it wasn't like a comedy. I watched it as if it was a documentary. That is the life I wanted. That's why I moved to America. It's why I moved to Chicago. It's why I sat in the bleachers of a Cubs game every afternoon for an entire season.
Uh-huh.
Hey, batter, batter, swing, batter, batter. Ferris Bueller is possibly the greatest piece of soft power created by America. It's louder than bombs.
Uh-huh. And it brought you over here, Rog.
Made me meet you.
What about your life has been like, Ferris Bueller?
Mostly Cameron. About things.
That's so good. So the sport this weekend, Roger, I've got to say, the tennis. I know you're not a huge tennis fan, not like I am, but
Alexi loves the tennis.
The tennis was incredible.
I adore the tennis.
This weekend.
I adore the tennis.
Why are more people not watching tennis? Why are so many people watching crap football when they could be watching incredible, incredible tennis?
All the good lookers like Ivan Lendl have long retired.
Yeah, that's very, very true. Well, Stan Wawrinka, he's no fitness model, Rog, and yet he's a bull. He just pounds the crap out of the ball again and again and again and again. He frankly just blew Djokovic off that court, Rog. It was incredible stuff. Plus, Serena Williams, the American athlete that does not get enough respect, that not enough people talk about, as Jason Gay at GFOP wrote in the Wall Street Journal. That could be the Grand Slam, Rog. She's on course. She's won the Australian. She's won the French. Wimbledon, US Open to come. She could win the Grand Slam. Serena Williams is an amazing, amazing American athlete.
Narrative, David.
Yeah.
I mean, when we grew up and tennis was king,
yeah,
tennis was stuffed with characters. Vitas Gerulaitis.
Yeah.
So shiny in your whitest. Hilarious. Yeah. And Mats Wilander.
Yeah.
Bjorn Borg, Henri Leconte. Hilarious, hilarious characters.
McEnroe and Lendl, just the how much they hated each other and so clearly how they hated each other.
Yeah. I mean, that seems to have fallen out the game a little bit, because when you think about tennis rationally, it is the most remarkable life that is lived by professional athletes who have to rely on themselves without blinking for an extended period of time. That makes golfers, the four rounds of golf they play, look actually a very small amount of time compared to how long you have to be on your game to win a major tournament.
In terms of quality.
Too rational, though. Not enough. You cannot emotively connect to that
game. In terms of quality, like pound for pound, what tennis gives you is rally after rally, shot after shot, like minute after minute after minute after minute, in the hour, just full of just amazing, amazing points, amazing quality, amazing athletics, and a desire to win. Serena Williams' desire to win tennis tournaments, to win tennis matches, to win championships is unmatched for me in the entire history of women's sport.
No Louis van Gaals, no Sam Allardyces, no Steve Bruce's. It's a one-hand clapping. It's an emotional experience for me.
It's good sport though, Rog.
And I cannot wait for that US Open.
We've got a packed show, we're going to break down the US women's national team's 3-1 win over the Matildas, Rog, of Australia, and look ahead to Friday's game against Sweden and former coach Pierre Sundhage. We relive the US men's 7-goal thriller with the Netherlands and recap an electric end-to-end Champions League final. We're joined by comedian, writer, actor from Little Britain and Bridesmaids, Rog.
An Arsenal
Matt Lucas,
fan.
Big Arsenal fan. But first, new developments from FIFA land. The BBC reports US prosecutors are investigating former FIFA Vice President Jack Warner over the disappearance of money meant for Haiti earthquake victims, Rog. Meanwhile, in another move befitting the football world's Enron, FIFA released a statement Monday claiming it cannot legally strip Russia and Qatar of the World Cup because FIFA is so concerned about legality.
It only did that, Dave, because the day before, Domenico Scala, the independent chairman of FIFA's Audit Compliance Committee, the bloke who's responsible for overseeing the transformation, he let slip in an interview that, Russia and Qatar may be stripped of their hosting rights if conclusive proof of corruption does emerge. FIFA then briefed against this information, I guess a sign of the panic that is currently engulfing the FIFA headquarters. I mean, every story now, Dave, that is coming out is just more outlandish. It's the kind of work is like plucked from a Carl Hiaasen novel. And not a good Carl Hiaasen novel. I mean, you read them and you are just like, I mean, first of all, Tariq Panja, great journalist for Bloomberg, he wrote an expose of Sepp's weekend that we were trying to think, was it soul-searching that had led to Sepp to go from being president of everybody to president of nobody? And Panja wrote, he interviewed a lot of FIFA officials and Blatter confidants.
Did he get any of the eunuchs?
I did. You know, the eunuchs have been well paid.
Silenced. They've been paid off.
Yeah.
Okay.
They've been well paid off.
Yeah.
And I think he may actually be carrying them over into his... I'd imagine he'd be trying to carry them over into his personal life as a civilian.
Got it.
But... he said the decision was made after a call with Coca-Cola.
Coca-Cola. Yeah.
Which sent him a sharply worded letter urging reform. So it was, in fact, as we'd always hoped, the American sponsors.
Yeah.
No moral anything there, but just their brand, what their brands can touch on the front page of the New York Times and what their brands can't touch, that gave him a shove. And then the next day, John Delaney, chief executive of the Irish Football Association, announced, we were paid $5.6 million plus $400,000 in hush money by FIFA to waive off any claim after Thierry Henry's handball led to the goal which knocked the Irish out of World Cup 2010 playoff contention, Dave. The German FA were one of the first to mock the Irish FA for taking such a bribe. And then it came out in the German newspaper, Die Zeit, that the then Chancellor Gerhard Schröder, supplied arms to Saudi Arabia, Davo, arms in return for their support in Germany's World Cup bid, in which it defeated South Africa 12-11 in the final round of voting. It alleged the government also lifted arm restrictions the day before the vote to make a shipment and help swing Saudi Arabia's vote, Davo.
Wow.
I'm guessing arms deals are more common in football than you'd imagine. I think Everton shipped arms to Scotland to secure the signing of Stevie Naismith.
Yeah.
Mostly swords.
Yeah.
Some catapults.
Perhaps
and a couple
some real
of long
human arms.
To help.
Yeah.
By the way, these claims together mean that votes for the 1998, 2006, 2010, 2018, 2022 tournaments are now under scrutiny. I would just say, FBI, you are so good at handling the media. A marvel. How they, a rumour comes out first and then they leak a document 2 days later. They are unbelievable. I spoke to someone at the Justice Department, Dave, this weekend, and he marvelled. He said, this case that we have, he said, for once, we've got a case where we're not trampling on anyone powerful in the United States. No one in the media is telling us we're doing a bad thing. Putin is our enemy. He said, we're getting worldwide love for bringing down FIFA. He said, it's the perfect case that dreams and careers are made of, which is truly fascinating. And perhaps the most gruesome piece of FIFA news that I know you'll be able to cast light on for me, Spanish daily newspaper El Mundo made the sensational claim Sepp Blatter had an affair with Irina Shayk.
Whoa.
In a piece titled All the Women in Blatter's Life, which was an amazing read. I need to ask you, Davo. Why, how, whither Would Arena Shite step out with Sepp Blatter? I don't
understand how I can't even answer. I think the use of the word step out, I think, is that's wonderful.
In what for world do we live? I'm sure she chose him because of his inner beauty.
Yeah.
There's
no world in which that happened.
How does
With
that
the
work?
Greatest respect to El Mundo or whatever paper that was, but it's hardly Die Zeit, Rog. I don't think that we can rely on that.
Turns out he's had a slew of young girlfriends.
Yeah.
All of whom he met, quote, through his daughter.
Yeah.
Sepp sounds like a worse dad than Stannis Baratheon. All right, we'll move away from those issues of love, Dave.
Yeah.
I'd never understand how the human heart beats, nor do I understand what truly goes on in a woman's mind, like Arena Shaikh.
Okay.
At Metacritic tweeted, United Passions, the FIFA movie,
with
Tim Roth as Sepp Blatter, hit American cinemas.
Oh, how's it doing, Rog?
You not heard this?
Yeah.
Well, the Guardian's review was pretty damning. They said, as cinema, it is excrement.
Excrement,
They made it sound almost as good as the Men in Blazers TV.
Yeah, it's good. That's good, Rog. And hasn't made a lot of money at the box office, I don't think.
It made $607 total.
Yeah.
Over
How much
the opening
did this
weekend.
Cost? Like $30 million to make?
The LA Times wrote, that's not millions or thousands, just $607. They had $27 million to produce this film.
Yeah.
But couldn't work out how to have proper grass for the Women's World Cup to go down on. How are you meant to have money to pay bribes, David? 607 doesn't even keep Chuck Blazer's cats in Meow Mix.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. It absolutely doesn't.
By the way, the sad truth about this movie is it was probably a huge tax write-off or some amazingly complex accountancy laundering scheme, which now is going to come out. We're all laughing at it, but it's dark. For now, just enjoy the news that Tim Roth can't open a movie like he used to.
To the football! Oh, there goes the carpet. Cheers, Rog.
To American victory.
Yes, to American victory, Rog. And they got off to a great start. USA 3, Australia 1. 1 down, 6 to go. GFOP Megan Rapinoe started scoring in the 12th minute with a tidy piece of footwork and a long-range effort that, it was deflected, past Australian keeper Melissa Barbieri. After a series of shots that forced US keeper Hope Solo into magnificent saves, Rog, Australia tied it in the 27th minute through captain Lisa Devana. But second-half goals from Kristen Press and the swashbuckling Rapinoe saw the US emerge victorious. Victory, yes, Rog, but quite a performance by the Australians. And the US, I'd have to say, a little bit flattered by that scoreline.
We will talk about the game in 1 second, David.
Yeah.
But I need you to put your TV producer's hat on.
Yeah.
Take a step back with me.
Okay.
Fox's coverage, the Vancouver studio, Rob Stone's wind tunnel.
Yeah. Well, on the one hand, I'm impressed, Rog. A lot of people questioned whether Fox would put money and put the production value into the Women's World Cup, and they certainly have. Impressive studio. It has a little mini soccer field right outside it. Rog.
I think Frank Lloyd Wright designed the house.
Yeah.
It was like falling water.
I thought it was Lego.
Sadly died in the middle of the design process and Wayne Newton stepped in to finish it off.
Yeah.
It's an amazing location.
Yeah.
What are the chances that they would build a studio and find right by it their favourite natural phenomenon?
Yeah.
The shrunken mini football pitch.
Yeah, exactly. It's amazing. It's amazing. Definitely a bit windy. They're having some problems with their papers on the desk. Alexi Lalas looks constantly to be worried that his papers are going to fly away.
Our hair pieces wouldn't stay on if we were involved in this production.
They're putting a lot of people on television, Rog. There are a lot of people on that panel in the studio. This has become a sort of a staple of sports. Certainly Fox have done it with their NFL coverage. ESPN did that with their World
Cup
coverage.
It's very good for the American desk
summer.
Industry, the desk building industry.
I'm not sure that they've had a terrific amount to say. I'm not sure that there's been that much to talk about to need that many people speaking about it. And I don't know how much they've added to our enjoyment or understanding of what's
going on. Tell you who it is for me. I'm falling in love with slowly.
Yeah. Rob Stone.
Stone is amazing.
Stone is doing
Stone
a great job.
Amazing.
Stoner is doing a fantastic job.
I mean, I wasn't thinking Stoney on this occasion.
It.
Russian sleeper cell operative.
Yeah.
Rob Stone.
It's true.
I was thinking about Ariane Hinkst.
Yeah.
The German one.
Yeah.
She's like Michael Ballack.
German one.
She's like Michael Ballack.
Yeah.
But human.
Oh, he loved us.
She's got human emotions.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just love her.
Yeah. So, no, I think it's impressive. I think the coverage on the whole, they're really making efforts. I think it's disgusting, but this isn't Fox's fault that the games are being played on artificial turf. Some of the stadiums, we were just watching match kicking off downstairs, does not look like a real sort of international tournament class stadium that they're playing, that Mexico are playing their opener in.
I think the oddest thing about it thus far, though, is that they kicked off the tournament by exhuming Sarah McLachlan. I mean, Canada.
Lilith Fair's Sarah McLachlan.
When I think of Canada,
yeah,
I think of the nation that gave us peaches. They could have had peaches.
Yeah.
They could have had Martha and the Muffins.
Oh, I was thinking Echo Beach, yeah.
They could have had Men Without Hats.
Yeah.
They could have got Bachman Turner Overdrive to get back together. And that's what they chose to drop on us.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't have time to complain, David.
Yeah.
Because all of the warm World Cup troops were soon back with us. Welcome back, Arm Folding.
Yeah. Hello. Oh, we love Arm Folding.
Hello, Tiso Subs Board.
Yeah. Oh, the FIFA anthem.
The FIFA anthem, David.
Yeah, like, let's embezzle the money, find apartments for all of our cats.
That was written by Andrew Lloyd Webber. It was a discarded one from Cats, the musical. Not a lot of people know that. All of our favourite moments, Davo, are back, bar one, which was pointed out to me by @laptanubu.
Yeah.
He said, the only complaint about the Women's World Cup so far, distressing lack of snot rockets.
Yeah. Yeah, not enough snot rockets in the women's game. Did a good rating, though, the US-Australia game. 2.1 overnight rating compares very favourably to the opening game of the 2011 Women's World Cup on ESPN. That did a 0.9 overnight rating. I think the US played their first game against Korea. That was in daytime, 11:30. This game, I think, kicked off at around 6:30, Rog. So, but against less competition was the ESPN one. So, I think pretty impressive.
Hinks would call that a 0.9.
Yeah, pretty impressive performance. And this is all, it's going to be about the US ratings. And it's going to be about how far the US go in this tournament, Rog.
Well, I'll say, before the game, Dave, I had an unusual emotion for US Women's National Team World Cup game.
Yeah.
I experienced nerves, David.
Before the game?
Yeah. Really? Not used to it. Group game.
Yeah.
Massive case of nerves.
Mm-hmm.
Abby Wambach, a lion in winter.
Mm-hmm.
The team not really clicking in the send-off games. Alex Morgan so omnipresent, but only in commercial breaks.
Yeah.
But those nerves, they kind of settled down as soon as we got ourselves some good old Canadian tunnel.
Yeah.
Whenever I see the white, black and fluorescent marker pen yellow of the United States flag, I just get so emotional, baby. Winnie Houston style.
Yeah, it is a slightly odd kit, Rog, to watch the US come out and play. And when I first turned it on, I was trying to remember which one was the US and which one was Australia, also playing in flashes of yellow in their uniform. And Australia started brightly, Rog.
Yeah, USA came out like Chelsea.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the FA Cup Chelsea of Chelsea 2, Bradford City 4. Australia were just quick on the counter.
Yeah, they've improved, Rog.
And USA were a frenzy of bad decisions. I mean, the US women's football tradition, I realised, and this is what gives me my fear, it's still women football 1.0. You know, power, endurance, aggression. But there's this new world order of the women's game. We saw it today in the France versus England game.
Yeah, skill.
The Germans, the Japanese, where they've taken the technical ability from their men's game that we don't have, honestly, in America. Their games are all about ball possession, movement, team play. The USA still seek to be an unstoppable force. But for large spells in that first half, Australia could cope with that all too easily and even enforce their own ideas on that midfield.
Yeah, putting passes together, one-touch football, gorgeous, gorgeous stuff. And frankly, without Hope Solo, the non-parade best goalkeeper in women's football history, and probably including the future. Future.
By non-parade, Rog, you mean socially odd? Is that what you're
saying? No, like unparalleled, although in every way, including socially, Rog. You know, Australia would have been 2-0 up. I don't think any other goalkeeper in world football would have saved those two shots.
Two massive saves, one actually extremely good. And then, you see, before kickoff, all of the controversy reawakening around Hope Solo. I mean, she's a human being who has made some dangerous life choices off the field. When you speak to any of her teammates and bring up the words Hope Solo, they always take a deep breath whenever they're asked about her. And then they give a kind of answer which, reading between the lines, comes across as, she's crazy, but she's all crazy. And she's not easy to love off the field. But on it, She's unbelievable, David. And I kind of think the US team, US soccer, are hoping they can just get through this tournament. Because they need, if they have any chance of winning, you've said, they need Hope Solo.
Well, Hope Solo is, I mean, we watched the goal today in the France-England game. Hope Solo would have saved it. There's Hope Solo is so good. She is the difference maker in this tournament. We talked about Manuel Neuer being the difference maker for Germany, being the extra player. Hope Solo is just so much better than everybody else. She makes a massive difference. What worries me is absent of Hope Solo, we are seeing the rest of the world catch up so quickly with the US. I think the US have to win this World Cup, Rog, because I think 4 years from now, the rest of the world will have caught up severely and on a World Cup, not on American soil, meaning America being the whole of the continent, Rog.
Meaning a nation in which we could invade if we wanted.
Rog. I think it's going to be it's going to get harder and harder for the US. And of course, we're seeing this question of style right now. And we're seeing the US caught in this idea. Do they still want to play that long ball up to Abby Wambach? Do they still want to just rely on Route 1 football? Or are they going to start putting passes together, playing a more possession-based game, a higher pressing game?
I mean, on Hope Solo, there is something fascinating about it. If she keeps playing the kind of dominant goalkeeping position that she showed in that first game, if all the personal life crap can be pushed off till post-Vancouver and not become a leaky tap haunting her throughout the tournament... We've talked about this before. She might emerge as a fascinating new prototype for women's soccer in this country, which until this point has been very squeaky clean.
Absolutely.
She could become a dangerous, wrestling, heelish female athlete who could become a national icon. First nasty US women's soccer player.
Look, and I'm not advocating the life choices she's made, nor is, I think, it an entirely fair comparison. But we talked earlier about Serena Williams. Serena Williams is not known for being, anything less than an insanely competitive, quite vicious competitor. Her desire to win, her giving of no quarter to her opponents, her giving of no credit to her opponents when they do things well. She is not exactly the squeaky clean image of the American female athlete either. I don't want to... I think it's difficult with Hope Solo because American soccer has been quite squeaky clean. It has relied on such an incredible image. But Hope is viciously competitive. She is athletically gifted and she is just so good. I think there is this judgy double standard. And I think male athletes would get away or not have the focus on their private life and their...
Not with the family, not with the familial domestic violence.
I'll tell you, only in very, very recent times have those issues been put on American athletes, and only in the most extreme cases, in the common or garden cases. And I would argue that Hope Solo's case is kind of, compared to what's been going on in the NFL, I think it's probably not that extreme, Rog. I think there is a lot of focus brought on it because she's a female athlete.
I mean, irrespective, the US needed someone else other than Hope to step up, and that someone was Megan Rapinoe. A spin, a stab, a deflection, but what relief, David. As Sunderland spent the whole final month of the season proving crap goals count just the same as stunning strikes.
Yeah, I love a crap goal. The crapness of it was ruined by the excellent footwork she showed before the deflection.
Yeah, I mean, Megan Rapinoe, leader in word, leader in deed.
Amazing game she
and
had.
There's a game within the game for the US, I think, that's going on in this squad. It's about social media and the subtle jockeying to be the face of the team in the wake of the tournament, what they hope will be a successful tournament. Alex Morgan had a huge lead that was seen as unassailable going into this tournament. But I wouldn't be surprised, Davo, if someone in Hollywood is talking about a Megan Rapinoe biopic, let's put it into production, let's get Tilda Swinton attached. And she deserves it. She's a fantastic human being and a really fascinating face for this team. I mean, unfortunately, the US drew little confidence from her goal. They appeared to have fielded few calm heads that were comfortable on the ball. The Australians carried on passing with confidence unbowed. They worked the ball beautifully to Lisa Devanna, who celebrated her 100th cap by spanking it home, really spanking it home beautifully, left-footed. You call that a knife? This is a knife. At Hugo's Head tweeted us to say, oh my God, our defence is very Man United-ish. At Have and Havelock tweeted us immediately and said, the US are playing very much like end-of-season Tottenham.
Mm-hmm.
And it does get to Devo, a team who are so desperate to feed one back as opposed to just play football. At times, they're like watching, and I don't mean this offensively to you, it's like watching New York City FC feed terribly desperate, unintelligent balls to David Villa when better options exist.
Yeah. Well, at least Abby Wambach has size and power as opposed to David Veer in terms of the way the NYCFC are playing. And they did win a game, Rog, this past weekend. They finally got 3 points on the board.
But Abby Wambach, she's not the Abby Wambach of 2011. No. Or else she's still finding her form after the unorthodox sitting out the domestic league to prepare for the World Cup, which is something that would never go down in the men's game.
Yeah, she would have scored that amazing chance.
The open header at the back post, which is her trademark. You could hear groans right across the country. She was playing like Stevie G without the guaranteed LA Galaxy contract.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, Davo, turf is such a killer for the long ball game. Turf destroys the long ball game.
Because the ball bounces too hard, Rog.
It zips away. It's gone. And this World Cup, I realise, watching the first couple of games, it's going to be like South Africa 2010.
Yeah, way too bouncy.
With the Jabulani ball, which was so defective, it made certain standard kinds of passes suddenly untenable. Teams had to adapt there, and they'll have to adapt in Canada. Short passes, possession, distinct advantage, as illustrated by Australia's first half. They could have gone into the halftime locker room, Davo, 3-1 ahead.
Yeah.
When the whistle blew, the camera honed in on Megan Rapinoe, and she just looked disgusted as she walked into that locker room, a player dreading the halftime team talk. Her team had just played as if their second half plan was to wait for a dragon to swoop down and rescue them. That second half, you loved it.
Yeah. No, second half, I thought, was started to see some great passages, some much better football from the US, and still some very good football from Australia. And then, frankly, you know, a player who'd had a very, very poor first half, Kristen Press, with a fantastic goal.
Yeah, Sydney Leroux found some extra pace on the flank. She cut back an intelligent ball to Kristen Press, who finished with style, first time into the corner, rejoicing across America. Not you, Ann Coulter, sit down.
Yeah.
And I'm thrilled for Kristen Press, who's taken an unusual, unorthodox role to the national team via the Swedish Professional League. And right after that, it turned the game. Australia wilted. Tobin Heath added an intelligence and sharpened edge to the US.
Yeah.
And by the time Megan Rapinoe went coast to coast with Australian defenders almost giving her a guard of honour.
Yeah.
On the way into the goal, inviting Megan to punish them, which she did. Well, she did, of course, because she's a painter.
Yeah.
She plays guitar.
Yeah.
She scores goals.
Yeah. And also, Hope Solo was not the opposition goalkeeper, or that never would have been a goal.
Yeah. It was a goal that was reminiscent of Gareth Bale's Taxi for Mycon goals.
Yeah.
With worse goalkeeping and better hair. One thing about that goal, David, that surprised me was Rapinoe is known for her goal celebrations, the kind of singing into the corner flag like Elvis Presley. And it was fascinating. She scored the backbreaker. The team were clearly going to win. She had a chance to deliver a Sports Centre highlight, which, frankly, this team really need to buoy the country behind them as they go into the rest of the group games. And she didn't, David. She could have fired up the bandwagon. And I think it's like a sign of this team still feel they need confidence. They still are aware they're not playing as well as they need to go deep as the memory of the 99ers demands they do. And although you've talked about World Cups, the first game is always the hardest. They're campaigns. And I guess we should feel pleased that they showed progress over the course of the 90 minutes. Yet Australia, this is what terrifies me. Australia 2015, so much better than 2011, which I think is a sign of just how deep this tournament is going to be and how tough the elimination round is.
I think two very positive things you can say is, look, even... you know, even teams that win the World Cup, even very, very good teams have to win when they play badly. I think this was a poor US performance, and I think they found a way to win a game. And it's a game that at certain points in the first half, it almost looked like it was going to get away from the US, something I've never, ever seen having watched the US women's national team. I think the second positive thing is the US fitness. And that's not... me looking down my nose at the women's game and saying that the women aren't fit enough from the other countries to go and play. They obviously have tremendous fitness, but the adrenaline in a World Cup is very different. You do see teams tire in ways that they don't in regular friendlies or regular internationals. And I think the US fitness, the US performance in the final 20 minutes, just their speed, their pace, their power was very, very impressive. And I think they'll continue to be able to break down teams late.
My big takeaway was one of relief that the US can still win big games without Chuck Blazer having their back. Thank God. Anyway, interesting business note.
Yeah.
Fox Sports announced to the Wall Street Journal that they're close to selling out TV ad space for the US broadcast of the Women's World Cup. Mm-hmm. They're on pace to generate $17 million in revenue for the event, which would be a record. Almost all of which appears to come from an apparent bulk deal they've struck with 1877 Cars for Kids.
Yeah.
Who seem to set a charity that I don't quite understand how it works, but they seem to have an inordinate amount of money to buy blanket coverage for a massive event in Prime.
Tell us around the country if this is a national commercial or if it's just playing in the local breaks. Because I don't know. I've only watched this in New York, and I've seen that commercial a lot recently.
We're getting a lot of divorce lawyers, local divorce lawyers. So I know a lot of the buys are local, but I'm assuming that one is probably annoying people across the nation. I'll say this. The commercial for the Women's World Cup are like Super Bowl ads in opposite world.
Huh. Interesting stuff. The US's next game, Rog, against Sweden at 8 p.m. Friday on the Fox Network.
Oh, Pierre Sundhage. Go easy on
Sweden, Nigeria drew their opening game. It's going to be interesting group.
And you thought they both looked fantastic.
I thought they both looked good at times in that
game. You said to
me
they look better.
They've got offense, those teams. Obviously, they've got defensive problems, as do the US. Though it's going to be a close group. One has to look at this. We knew it was the group of death going in. But I think the US is going to come out of this a stronger team.
Becky Sauerbrunn, courage. Yep.
Rog, the Champions League final took place on Saturday. Juventus won, Barcelona 3. Barcelona's trident of world-class attackers. It's just 11 giants, Rog, and a bench of more giants. They proved too much for the Italian champs in a thrilling
1-1.
Final. With the game tied at 1 in the 68th minute, Luis Suarez latched onto a Lionel Messi rebound to put the Spanish side ahead. Neymar would add a third in the game's final seconds, ensuring Barca completed the treble.
Oh, can we just sing the praises of Rob Stone one more time?
Yeah, we love us some
Rob Stone. Watching the pregame, I realise no one in sports puts more effort into the pregame show. He walks miles.
Yeah.
Segment to segment. One segment, he's behind the desk.
Yeah.
Next segment, he's in the three leather armchairs.
Yeah.
Next segment, somehow he's rematerialized by the tiny green football pitch.
Uh-huh.
And then he's back to the desk.
And no one walks and talks. I've said this before. No one walks and talks like Rob Stone during a link.
How does he not have his own deodorant line?
Yeah,
I would buy.
We'll work on that.
Rob Stoner.
Stoner. Odor Stoner.
I also need to talk to you about something we've never talked about before.
Yeah.
The Heineken oil tanker commercial.
Okay, break it down,
Rog. Have we not talked about this before? Yeah. It's so odd. It's meant to look like the coolest party ever, but it's 100% sausage fest. Well, would you rather be locked on a voyage on that rotting Abyssinian freighter?
Yeah.
Or would you rather be locked in the Fox bunker with Ronaldo?
That's a Sophie's choice, Rog. I think the Fox bunker, you're talking about the bunker where they broadcast games from. So assuming that Warren would be around, Stoner occasionally.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's a trick question. Of course you'd take Ronaldo.
Yeah, I'd be in the bunker, Rog.
You admire Ronaldo's dedication too.
Oh, it's his sweater. There are no parameters. There is no end or beginning to sweater season for Eric Ronaldo. He's a four-season sweater, Eric. Sometimes he does the cardigan. Sometimes it's the sweater vest. Sometimes it's the full crew neck. Sometimes I believe I've seen him in a crew neck. It's a V-neck and a crew neck on the same broadcast day, Rog. He is an impressive sweater wearer.
He commits.
Yeah, he really commits
to the sweater. I admire that.
I also think that the relationship between Ronaldo and Lallis, I think it's going to come to blows. I think there will be violence before the end of calendar year 2015.
I think
it's going to come to blows.
I think they're going to kiss each other on the mouth.
Well, the two could easily happen within the same broadcast, Rog. There could be a mouth-to-mouth kiss and a fight. Yeah.
But another quick one. Brad Friedel.
Yeah.
He sounds like Peter Baelish taught him English. We both peddle fantasies, Brother Lancel.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the Champions League.
Yeah.
The game kicks off. Again, for me, I'll say a massive game sullied by the FIFA scandal. It's going to take some time for me to fully love football and allow the cognitive dissonance I use in other areas of my life to so successfully repress true emotions to fuel the healing.
No, the live rendition of the UEFA anthem, Rog, the champions. That was pretty exciting.
That was peak live rendition of the FIFA champions. By the way, it's not just football in general that's been sullied by the FIFA scandal.
Yeah.
At Ari Dozera tweeted, is it wrong to root for Juventus simply because they're not sponsored by a country using slave labour to build stadia?
Yeah.
Fascinating question. All I'd say is, Harry, do not delve too much into the history or the finances or the corrupt practices of too many of the teams. It's very hard to find one that's an elite.
Yes, yeah, very, very true.
Once you start coming in with your ethics and your moralities, football quickly becomes a bag of poop. But Juventus, the non-Qatar Foundation team, press forward like the hounds of hell for 3 minutes, 30 seconds. And then Barcelona got the foot on the ball and then corked a goal that involved all 10 outfield players combining before Iniesta found Rakitic on the run. It was all a bit training game, David.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. Iniesta and Rakitic finished it off, but it was that crossfield ball from Messi to Neymar, who in the previous two plays in the game had just ghosted past his opponents. They gave him space, thinking he was going to run past them again. What happens to a man if he's given too much time on the ball? He can pick out any pass he wanted. That pass to Iniesta, that run from Iniesta was gorgeous. And Rakitic, not the most likely scorer of the opening goal in the Champions League, finally put it away, finished it well.
Do you know Catalans have 80 words for snow?
Yeah.
But no phrase for scored too early.
Wow. Yeah, they don't need one.
But at the time, the goal was a masterstroke by Juve.
Yeah.
It made Barcelona relax a little. And the rest of the first half is less a football game, more just perpetual crimes against fashion.
Yeah.
The denim deal that Barca have inked that makes all of their coaching staff sport Canadian tuxedos on the sideline. And just one terrible hairstyle decision after another all over the field.
Yeah.
Vidal.
Vidal almost looked normal in this game.
Oh, Dave. Neymar.
Yeah.
Alves.
Yeah.
Pogba. Piqué, who appeared to have borrowed Louis van Gaal's toupee for the occasion. It was just like, who wore it worst? At Brad Surthin wants to know from you, Davo, how many sectors does Vidal have problems in?
He's not thinking about his sectors. Vidal is so not aware of that. There are moments he was so aggressive in that first half, but I love that player. I love that kind of football.
His barber's actually Tyroshi. The first half featured a quality save from Buffon, who parried the ball all day long like an Italian Brad Guzan.
Yeah.
A daisy cutter from Suarez. Juve really just restricted to strikes from distance. But then they started to enforce themselves on the game. Pogba, absolutely magnificent. And Gary Neville referred to him as a glitter ball. In about 20 years' time, he's going to be an excellent MLS player, David.
Yeah, and it was a hard challenge in midfield that resulted in their equaliser, Rog.
Yeah, luscious Marchisio backheel setup. Alvaro Morata struck a mighty blow for narrative. A Madrid-born Real Madrid reject. Oh, the tingling. And talk began. Could this be the Gigi Buffon final?
Yeah.
So it came completely against the run of narrative, Davo, and the camera operator's ability to actually follow play. As Messi shimmied in like Argentinian Tom Cleverley. Shot low, Buffon parried, but then Luis Suarez, swept in the rebound. What's the opposite of could not have happened to a nicer guy, David? Because that's how I felt. I said to myself, God, why do you delight in making us think you don't exist?
It was a good finish, actually, from Suarez. You know, I can't comment on what kind of a guy he is outside of the biting, Rog.
And the racism.
Yes, but I can't comment what he's like off the field. He seems to love his family. He was quite good in being Liverpool in those moments.
That was a documentary.
That he played those things. But it was a good finish. And
always
then,
be the boot in Monopoly.
And then Juventus pretty much collapsed. Barcelona ran rampant, Rog.
Can you say Luis Suarez's life journey?
Yeah.
Life journey is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Last summer, he's had the reverse Sepp Blatter. He was in disgrace last summer with the bite. And he's a hero now, once more, scoring the... that must have been an amazing arc for a human to experience. Neymar almost added a third with his hand. Ruled off for being too South American.
Yeah, his outrage and pointing to his shoulder, which seems that he's a little bit confused, that the thing on the end of his wrist is not his shoulder, that it's actually his hand. I would say that Neymar really impressed me in this game. I thought Neymar was terrific from start to finish.
First player in history to score a goal in both quarterfinals, both semi-finals and the final of the Champions League. He ended the game with a 100% Jesus headband on.
Yeah.
Which I'm guessing was a very moving and unexpected tribute to Jesus Navas.
Yeah, could be, Rog. Do you know what really struck me about watching Barcelona in this game? And I'm sure I'm really late to the party and late to this this analysis, is that so much of modern football, where the standard of everyone has increased so much and everybody's lateral speed and fitness and everything is so much better, that there is such a premium on players who can beat another player off the dribble. They're so rare in football. Some teams have won. Chelsea, I would say, you could argue, won the Premier League because they've got Eden Hazard, who is the best player in English football at beating a player off the dribble. Barcelona have so many players who can beat a player off the dribble. And in Messi and Neymar, they have the two very, very best in world football.
Almost seems unfair, David.
And then they've got the players who can make the run, the players who can make the intelligent pass. They've got that steel in midfield. They've got a terrific goalkeeper, Rog. They are just about the perfect football team.
It's as close a feeling as you have to this team could build a dynasty if they keep it together, stockpiling Neymar, Suarez, Messi. Yeah. I mean, they are the best trio in the world, apart from Haim. Suarez is definitely Esty in that relationship. The moment of the game for me, though, Davo, Iniesta putting the captain's armband on his friend Xavi for one last time. A beautifully human moment. I don't know how Xavi held it together when he trotted onto the pitch. He's won 28 trophies, including four Champions Leagues at Barcelona. He's a 35-year-old who's been at Barca for 24 of those years. He's off to Qatar to make a boatload of cash. Maybe that helped keep the tears at bay. Another man who did sob, Andrea Pirlo, at the final whistle. I cried with him.
Yeah.
Few men have given so much to so many so suavely. At that, Josh Cale tweeted, "Watching Andrea Pirlo cry is like a Tracy Chapman song personified."
Yeah.
At Mark Top Shelf said, "Pirlo's crying because he's headed to a team where he's going to be the second most handsome man behind at Mixed Discord."
Although that is, as an NYCFC fan, Rog, I hope that this is all going to be confirmed in the next few days, and I can't wait to see him play in the sky blue. US men's national team, in a game that was equally as exciting as the Champions League final, if slightly less meaningful.
And by less, you mean more.
Yeah, if we are to read too much into international friendlies again. The US men's national team beat the Netherlands in a 7-goal thriller, trailing 3-1 in Amsterdam. John Anthony Brooks began the comeback in the 70th minute, and goals from Danny Williams and Bobby Wood in the game's dying embers gave the US their first ever win against the Orangi, and a remarkable, remarkable friendly victory, Rog.
Dave, if any bribes,
bags
of cash, or weapons deals fix this result, I don't want to know about them. Just let me live with the joy of this game and its result. I mean, the imbalance between these two squads was best captured by Doug McIntyre before the game. He said, "The Dutch substitutes play at PSG, Lazio, Ajax, Galatasaray, Feyenoord and PSV. The US men's national teams play at Stanford University and Minnesota United." I mean, what was fascinating in this game was that the US just didn't wilt. Huntelaar put them at the Dutch ahead, but then Kyle Beckerman drove the team forward at the heart of everything good. The team kept running. They netted an equaliser. A looping diagonal from Fabian Johnson found Yassi Zardes, a goal which would make Jurgen very, very happy. Good, Jazzy! And then in the second half, Huntelaar carbon copied his first goal and then followed up that trick by banking in a shot off Memphis Depay's face.
Yeah.
I mean, Stathound started to troll the team. The US has outscored opponents 12-4 in the first half after the World Cup, but been outscored 14-3 in the second half, which made me hope the FBI and Loretta Lynch would force FIFA to make football just a 45-minute game.
Yeah.
But the US kept churning, David. I don't know how they do it.
Yeah. Well, I think that's that American spirit. It's that non-wilting behaviour. It was a little weird to watch them at the end of last season, Rog. You know, the second half performances, that loss particularly in Dublin, still hurts, Rog. But this was so impressive. A never-say-die attitude. I'm not sure there's another team in international football that I would have seen coming back from that point, showing that much belief without necessarily an exceptional individual performance to go and spur it. Just good old-fashioned team
playing for the badge, playing like a group of 11 best friends.
Who outpassioned
passion.
Them.
They outpassioned
they
them.
They did. And Michael Bradley, if I had to pick out one gentleman, it was old school Michael Bradley.
Yeah.
It was he who set off DeAndre Yedlin, whose pace probably gave Spurs fans the instant thickening to set up our American strafender, John Brooks, yeah. Dared to Josie. Jordan Morris came on. Jordan yeah. Morris, David. American Messi, Stanford Messi, and ran yep. at, he ran at the
just
Netherlands.
Just to upset Taylor Twellman.
I'll admit, when he ran through the Netherlands defence, yep. David, I wet myself. I did.
Just a little bit
grown
or a
man.
Lot.
Pff, does it matter?
you wet yourself,
the difference. The difference is semantic. Yeah. I mean, he then earned the corner for the equaliser, grabbed mm-hmm. the assist on the winner. He's not just about the SATs,
yeah.
if you catch my drift. Mm-hmm. Jurgen, if you speak to him, he says he loves young, mouldable players.
Yeah.
He says if you're very young, you don't know you're meant to be afraid. Uh-huh. Jordan Morris is an extreme example of that. I mean, we saw that with him as soon as he came on Friday. We then scrambled a brave 88th-minute equaliser through Danny Williams, survived the Dutch smashing the ball off the crossbar, all this in the last 96 seconds, and then just strolled up the other end and set up Bobby Wood. Bobby Wood, who instantly became the greatest American out of Hawaii mm-hmm. since Tia Carrera.
Yeah.
Bobby Wood, a striker from the third division in Germany, David. Mm-hmm. He took down Holland like Loretta Lynch taking down FIFA.
Yeah.
And it is it. We did. We outpassioned them, David.
And if you think that this result does not hurt in Holland, you do not understand the passion that Dutch football fans have for their team and the pressure put on the national coach. Rog, US men, they take on Germany in Köln Wednesday. Oh. Kickoff is set for 2:45 p.m. Eastern.
Beautiful
on
cathedral.
Fox
beautiful
Sports cathedral, One. Like. Fox have so much soccer, Rog. They don't know what to do with themselves.
Remember when NBC used to have it?
Yeah.
Football.
Yeah, I know. Remember it's a while things. Ago now. It's coming back really soon, Rog.
What about their under 20 team, Dave?
Oh,
what's
yes.
on Fox?
The US is in the knockout stages of the under 20 World Cup after falling to the Ukraine, Rog, 3-0 in the final game of the group stage. They'll take on Colombia at 3:30 a.m. Eastern Time on Wednesday. Oh. That game will have been played by the time you're listening to this. It happens in New Zealand, the Under-20 World Cup, Rog.
Victory!
In Premier League news, Tom Cleverley, Rog, congratulations. I'm sure you're happy about this. He's heading to Goodison. The 25-year-old Manchester United man who spent last season on loan at Aston Villa will sign a 5-year deal for Everton.
I had a giant sad nap at the mere mention of Tom Cleverley signing for Everton.
He did play well at the end of this season.
I've got to say, if that is a message of intent by Everton Football Club, it's a message that says, we intend to be very mediocre next season.
Well, the red half of Merseyside is turning to Turf Moor to try and generate goals. Rog, Liverpool have confirmed the signing of Burnley and England under-21 striker Danny Ings. Ings scored 11 goals last season for the championship-bound Clarets.
He's a fantastically intelligent striker.
Yeah.
It's a plus for Liverpool.
Mm-hmm.
A body that can score goals. They need one.
Yeah.
They've been an English striker's graveyard bar the oft-injured Sturridge. Andy Carroll, Ricky Lambert both derived as flavour of the month, only to wear the dunce cap. Say, the most exciting bit of Liverpool-related transfer news happened in the third pick in this week's MLB draft.
Oh, yeah, Brendan Rodgers, Rog.
The Colorado Rockies drafted a Lake Mary, Florida high school shortstop named
Brendan Rodgers.
The Brodge.
Yeah.
He's done conquering football. I've done all I can with this sport, lads. I'm going off.
I want to play for the Red Sox.
I'm going to go off and try and own another sport.
Yeah.
He's the British Bo Jackson.
Yeah.
Is Brodge. Funny enough, this Brodge, who's 18, this Brodge's family originally tried to get him to play soccer. His mother, Julie, told the newspapers, we didn't do baseball in this family. We're a soccer family. But Brendan, she doesn't call him Brodge yet. Brendan picked up a baseball for the first time at 5 and fell in love with the game. Bit like the real thing.
Yeah.
Can't wait for the Brodge to break through.
Very true. And news this morning, Rog, that West Ham have announced Slaven Bilic will replace Sam Allardyce as manager, the former Croatian international and punk rocker.
Yeah.
He played at Upton. Hard man. Played at Upton Park in the 1990s. He managed Turkish side Beşiktaş last season.
I miss Big Sam.
Yep.
Going on the record, for us, a man whose body is 72% made out of pie products is just irreplaceable.
Yeah.
But Bilic is pretty bloody cool.
Yeah.
In a scruffy ear pierce, not afraid to wear a beanie hat kind of cool way.
Yeah, there may well be some sideline fights involving, almost fights, actually real fights involving Bilic this season.
Yeah, I mean, his Turkish team had, I think, 10 red cards in 30 or so games.
Yeah.
Next, the tales of him being a West Ham returning hero are very strange to me because he took the field, I think, 55 times and then left on terrible terms to join an awful, awful Everton side.
Mm-hmm.
But prepare to hear a lot about how he likes to play the guitar. When he was the manager of Croatia, he wrote the team's official Euro 2008 track, Vecreno Ludilo, which literally means fiery madness, Davey.
Uh-huh.
I think he's going to be great for the Men in Blazers show.
Yeah, we're going to enjoy it.
Big Sam was more of a bass player kind of guy at the end of the day, don't you think?
Yeah, very much so.
Two other pieces of coaching news.
Yeah.
Self-proclaimed best coach in the Premier League. John Carver's been sacked by Newcastle today. No surprise there to anyone apart from John Carver. And we've got ourselves a new Premier League manager, another one.
Yeah.
Dick Advocaat.
Yeah. Well, he changed his mind, Rog.
He's done a U-turn.
Yep.
He's decided to come back to the Premier League for another year. He said, he told the Dutch media, I've decided to accept Sunderland's offer. They kept on calling me.
Uh-huh. It's a brilliant negotiating tactic.
I just say, in other news, young men listening to the pod who are still working out how to win over members of the opposite sex, the shorter answer is not like that.
Yeah.
Not like that.
Yeah.
It's called stalking.
Yeah. In an effort to cultivate a, quote, clean branding image, the Premier League will go sponsorless when its current deal with Barclays expires at the end of next season. In an effort to cultivate a clean branding image, because nobody else was stepping up, willing to spend the money.
Barclays paid $61 million per season.
Yeah.
The English Premier League reportedly wanted $92 million.
Yeah.
Awful announcing reported that Diageo, Guinness's brewer, offered $65 million a year, which the Premier League sniffed at. Awful announcing wrote, I would have loved it if it were called the Guinness Premier League, and I'm sure the men in Blazers would have lost their minds if that had come to fruition. All I'll say is the GPL has a nice ring to it.
Yeah, the GPL.
Yeah, but the English Premier League will now become a clean brand, America, like your Major League Baseball, your NFL.
Yeah.
That is until or a FIFA. major brand like, well, what kind of major brand could come in? I'll tell you what I think will come in.
Huh.
Who's got that kind of money, $90 million? I'll tell you who.
1-800-CARS-FOR-KIDS.
1-877-CARS-FOR-KIDS. Cars for kids. They're going to cough up the real money.
Yeah.
By 2017, I think we'll be cheering for the KFKPL.
Yeah.
Which sounds amazing, like a Tamil terrorist group.
Yeah. Okay, I guess.
KFKPL.
Today joined us in the panic room, Rog. We're going to release the interview as a video on NBCSports.com later this week. We got to speak with one of our comedy heroes, Rog, the one and only Matt Lucas.
The man behind us, Roger, comedian, a writer, an actor.
A genius.
Who starred in a litany of hit films and television shows, including one of our favourites, Little Britain. Actually, Shooting Stars, one of my favourites. In the film Bridesmaids, you might remember him as one half of the brother-sister-roommate duo who tortured Kristen Wiig and whose lack of social cues rivals only our own Roger. His new show, Pompidou, is available right now on Netflix. It's Matt Lucas.
Go and watch it now. Don't listen to this. Don't watch this. Go and watch Pompidou now, please.
But all I'll say is, if you've not watched Pompidou...
It's very odd.
Watch it, because in half an hour, you'll hear more sense spoken by human beings than you've ever heard on this show if you crushed it all together.
Yeah.
And that's saying something, because in Pompidou, rather than me describe it, it's a remarkable piece. It's like live-action cartoon.
It is,
out by humans.
It is very odd. It's about an old aristocrat who's fallen on hard times and had to move out of his country house, which is now crumbling, into a trailer in the grounds of the house.
Pompidou P. Pompidou.
That's right, where he lives with his dog and his butler. But the whole show is in gibberish, absolute gibberish. And it's for kids. It's like a nice, fun family kids show.
It is. It's like part Laurel and Hardy, part Benny Hill, part Swedish Chef from the Muppets. But you did become massive thanks to Little Britain. Blockbuster British sketch series over there. Came over here, Little Britain, USA, played on HBO.
Yeah.
What's the biggest difference that you've learned between what makes English people laugh and what makes an American audience start to giggle?
If I knew that, I don't know. I'd probably be bigger than I am. I don't know. The only thing I ever try and do is make myself laugh and hope other people like it.
Yeah.
you know, and that's the only way I can really do it. I don't know of any other way. I think there are some sort of kind of broad observations. I've noticed that often in British comedy, we'll have characters like Mr. Bean or Basil Fawlty or David Brent or Alan Partridge, and they're idiots. We love them, but we laugh at them and with them. Whereas in American comedy, I think you sometimes have cool characters. You're better looking. You know, everyone on British television who looks like a potato, let's be honest. But you only have to tune into an episode of QI to see that.
Yeah.
But on American television, you know, you had the Fonz or Friends.
Or Ted Danson on Cheers.
Right, it's more aspirational, yeah. I think. And you know why? I think the American sitcoms are soapier than the British sitcoms. Now, in Britain, we have 3 or 4 or 5 nights a week. We have these 2 or 3 very popular soap operas
dark,
that run for half an hour.
Each one darker than the next.
Yeah, and they run in prime time, and they're Coronation Street, EastEnders, Emmerdale. Yeah. They're these half-hour
Coronation
prime time
Street up north, EastEnders down London.
Where do you want your poverty? Do you want it in the Manchester yeah. region? Do you want your poverty in lived in London?
Yeah. Or do you want it down at West Ham Way?
Or do you want rural poverty?
But here's the thing. They don't really have anything like that on American television.
Where the soap operas are completely unbelievable.
Right,
they're
unbelievable, right? So I think actually what happens is that a show like Big Bang Theory not only fulfills the role of being a sitcom, it also slightly fulfills the role of being a soap opera.
God, that's interesting.
There's something, well, not just aspirational, but there's something warm and comforting about those kind of sitcoms.
So
they're safe and warm and comforting, and they're a world you want to inhabit. Even when they're not making you laugh, you're just happy to be with
and
those
meanwhile,
people.
It's
and that's why they show it every night at the same time.
So it's
and American dramas have the antagonists. Like you're saying that the leads in American dramas are the unlikable idiots, the people you not laugh at, but they're the people it's tough to like.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's Tony Soprano or, you know, Walter White. Like, these are the people. It goes the other way.
Yeah.
I won't have you say those kind of things about Airwolf, but it's an interesting statement about the different cultures. Like, in England, it is. It's like you feel happier knowing that you're not – there's people who are worse off than you. And in America, you feel better knowing that there's a ladder that you can keep ascending.
So, do you find football funny? Because we find football hilarious.
Yeah, it is. Because let's be honest. I mean, you know, sometimes people go, oh, come on, it's only a game. It's just some men kicking around pig's blood. I mean, what is it all about? And you say, shut up, you don't understand. It's so much more. And it is more because we've invested it with a meaning. I was never into football. And then I was about 9 years old and I started collecting football stickers, which was a big pastime.
Panini. Yeah.
Panini football stickers. And you'd have an album. And you'd swap the ones that you had duplicates of and you'd send off right to the manufacturers for the ones you didn't have and you'd pay a few pence. And as soon as I started collecting those stickers...
It's how FIFA made all their money, by the way.
Oh, I'm sure.
They were realizing.
I'm children.
Sure. Yeah. As soon as I started collecting those stickers, I could put a name to the face. And then finally, when I watched television, I was 9 or 10, and I watched football on TV.
When they finally put it on TV.
Right. And I would watch the match, and I go, oh, that's interesting. I remember him.
Yeah.
And he used to play for the opposition team, and now he plays there. That's interesting.
Narrative.
Or, oh, I remember him. He's actually playing in the same team that his brother used to play in.
And, Jimmy Greenhoff.
Right. Yeah. And suddenly, oh, well, Jimmy and Brian, suddenly there's a narrative, like you say, and like a soap opera, and it becomes this world.
Yeah.
And it's not this abstract game. It's why I actually find it quite hard to watch football in to watch a foreign football match. Even though I can appreciate it, I don't get passionate about it. I have...
Because you don't know the characters.
You don't know the
backstory.
Yeah.
You don't know the setting. You don't know the themes.
Yeah, and there's good football in the MLS, but I've been to Galaxy games and I've enjoyed them, but I haven't ever gone home and thought about them afterwards. And you see some good football as well there, but that's just how it goes. I think you have to build that narrative. And I think once you know that narrative, football becomes funnier.
Yeah.
Because you know the traits. Like Harry Redknapp...
Harry...
just joined Twitter yesterday.
Amazing.
Right?
Amazing news.
And of course, everybody's tweeting him, you're going to have a terrific time, because that's one of the things he says, terrific. And you're going to have a top time. And suddenly, like, people... And just, you know, and that makes me laugh.
Yeah.
And I know there's going to be, and I hate this word, but banter there.
Banter.
And so, yeah, the world of football, the culture of football is funny, I think.
We should say Matt is a massive, it's probably an understatement, Arsenal fan.
Yeah, yeah.
Mazel tov on the FA Cup final defenestration.
Yeah, I was there.
North London.
It was very nice. I mean, oddly, And this is an awful thing to say, but you know, Aston Villa, I don't think they had a shot on target.
They had two block shots.
They didn't even have a corner. And the thing was that once the second goal went in, it was more relaxing than some massages I've had.
How do you net out on this season? Obviously, it ended beautifully at Wembley against poor Tim Sherwood's Aston Villa.
Well, I can say that after Arsenal lost to Man United, I was the most despairing I've been. And it was the first time I've ever, as a fan, actually gone, you know, the truth is, I love this club more than anything, but watching these games is genuinely just upsetting me and frustrating me. And I'm not going to put myself through this.
Welcome to my world.
Well, I took a break. And it's the first time I've ever, ever, ever done this. I thought, you know, this isn't just about the club. This is about me, and I need to do something about this. And what is the point of me sitting down and watching football matches and just getting angry and depressed? It is ultimately supposed to be about entertainment.
Yeah.
And so I took a little break of about 6 matches. I said, I'm not going to watch football for a month or two, or it might be the end of the season. I don't know, but I'm taking a break from football. It was just my own personal existential crisis, to be honest with you.
Believe me, we've been there. I've been there. Look, incredibly this season.
In marriages, you sometimes need a break. I'm sure there are people in long and happy marriages who said, actually, I'm just going to go. I'm not leaving you. I still love you, but I just need 6 weeks to just get my head together. And
watch football.
It was a midlife crisis. Yeah, exactly. It happens. And I know other people who went through the same thing. So you have it with Everton.
Yeah. You know what? I've talked a lot about it. I believe in luck in football. If I move to a special seat, Everton will get the equaliser. And then I decided to make the ultimate sacrifice and be like Jonah and the whale and just throw myself overboard. Everton were doing so poorly. I was over at Everton. I interviewed Tim Howard. I said, Tim, we're not going to get relegated, are we? And he goes, well, we're not getting relegated. And I left there feeling never so sure. I was absolutely sure we were going to get relegated.
Really?
And him like that. So I realised, I'm not going to watch. See if they do differently without me watching.
And they did. Okay.
They started playing better because Roger, by not watching, affected the team. And then they won again. And then I got so calm and cocky about my team again. I watched them play Dynamo Kiev. And Dynamo Kiev beat them 5-1. So I then realised it was all about me.
It was all about me.
And it's very dark. But this is not about me. I want to run through the Arsenal issues with you. Arsene Wenger, do you love him more as a football fan or as a comedy writer?
I'm a Wenger in guy. I am. Be careful what you wish for. And I think history will show that he managed an amazing period of transition. I'm an Arsenal fan, absolutely. You know, here's the thing. Liverpool, Tottenham, I'm sure they spend more money than us. Man United certainly did over the last couple of years. None of them have won a trophy, have they?
Got to FA Cup led to many knee-jerk lovers of narrative to proclaim, as they need to fill columns, Arsenal are going to be legitimate title challenges next season. Mm-hmm. What
I
do you feel?
Legitimate.
They are legitimate.
I like legitimate.
They are legitimate. What do they need over the transfer?
I don't know, because they did sort of say the same thing at the end of last season, didn't they?
Yeah. What do they have to do in this transfer? A couple more tiny midfielders put you over the top.
Yeah, exactly. I think I am a fan of Ospina. I think he's done brilliantly. I like Chesney. I think he's good as well. I think they're good goalkeepers. But I think ultimately you don't win the league without having an amazing goalkeeper. Amazing goalkeeper. Not a good goalkeeper.
That happened this year
at
Chelsea.
Not a great goalkeeper.
So you watch.
You're right. And look at Cech. Cech is a fantastic goalkeeper.
Yeah.
Did nothing wrong, but they put Courtois in and they won the league.
Yeah.
And I think they have to have an older, experienced goalkeeper. The problem with Ospina, I think, the only problem with Ospina is he's 6 foot, and I think that's too short now to be a goalkeeper at this level. Otherwise, if he was an extra 3 inches taller, I think he'd be your goalkeeper. And Chesney is really good. He's really good. He's probably as good as Lukic was. But I think in today's football, you might just need somebody more experienced.
What about the other end, Olivier Giroud? What's your position on the frosted tips?
I like him. I think he's good. I think you need someone else as well. I don't think you need someone instead.
Another striker. Yeah. Who do you covet? Who out there in the world do you covet as an Arsenal fan?
I think Robin van Persie would be so popular. Everybody would want that person to would come want back, wouldn't they? Yeah, who do I cover?
They'd buy him, but then they'd just want his head on a spike to be paraded around their
mouth. Harry Kane. Let's buy Harry Kane.
Harry Kane.
Just for a wind-up.
Harry Kane. I know that would drive Tottenham fans insane.
You are, or were...
Well, I don't know. You're looking
LA.
At me.
Yeah, I know.
I don't know.
Roommate with Rebel Wilson. Finishes.
Yeah, you're still roommates.
She's just moved out.
In West Hollywood.
Yeah, we've lived together for almost 3 years, and we met on Bridesmaids. We were brother and sister, or husband and wife, or the same person, however you want to look at it. We were brother and sister on Bridesmaids, and we lived together for nearly 3 years. She moved out a couple of weeks ago. She's a big movie star now. She's got her own house.
This is great timing, because if I could offer you any Arsenal squad member as your next roommate, who would you take?
Ooh.
I've thought about this question quite a lot.
Well, I know...
Mertesacker would be useful. You always need a tall person around to change light bulbs, to reach things that you need to go and find. Mertesacker would be good at that. You'd also hear him coming.
He's tall. Chesney's tall as well.
Yeah.
He's got a bit of time on his hands these days. I think... Jack Wilshere might be a bit unruly, so I think we should avoid.
He'd be out at Soho House.
Actually, I've met.
Stop using the coffee cups as ashtrays, Jack.
I tell you who's very urbane.
Yeah.
I tell you who's very urbane. I think Callum Chambers is going to grow into a very handsome young man. Uh-huh. That's interesting. But I tell you who's very urbane. Matthew Flamini. Matthew Flamini is very urbane. I've met him a few times. I tell you who he's very, very friendly with. David Guest.
Really?
Yeah, David Guest.
Partner
and Matthew
of Elton John.
No, that's David Furnish.
Oh, David Furnish.
You've mixed up your gaze.
Oh, David Guest.
David Guest,
the former husband of Liza Minnelli.
Yes, the one with the see-through hair.
Oh my word.
Yes, I think Flamini would be. Yeah, you want a Frenchman around the house.
Flamini's friends with David Guest. Now I'm recovering from that, and just that's dawning on me.
Yeah.
Is that?
I think
is that the definition of urbanity? To be the.
Well, no, but just in general, when you meet him, he's sort of chatty. He's not. It's not like meeting a footballer. Oh, Kieran Gibbs is a charming gentleman.
Yeah, he's a good
player. Carl Jenkinson was a charming gentleman. Aaron Ramsey is a charming gentleman. I think the Arsenal team are very well turned out.
They're charming on the whole.
Charming gentleman, yes.
If I imagine living with Per Mertesacker.
Really?
I imagine like we'd read Hannah Arendt books. Yeah. You'd see Davidovich, the war against the Jews. We'd have like our own little book.
Would you get up close and personal with Per?
I'd do it in the name of English. German kind of reconciliation.
Yeah, that's good.
Like to become a symbol for the children of the future. I mean, you grew up a fascinating bloke. I enjoyed reading about you greatly. You grew up bald, gay, and Jewish in North London.
You missed out, fads.
You know what? Add whatever you want to it. England's not a very all-embracing culture. You lost your hair to alopecia when you're age 6. Can I say? I mean, you talked about what drove you into entertainment. Is there a direct line in your mind from losing your hair to being where you are today? Or put another way, if we were going to remake Gwyneth Paltrow's Sliding Doors, do you imagine a fully haired Matt Lucas just being an accountant in Istanbul?
There's a happier, heterosexual, hirsute Matt living a wonderful life with kids.
In Northwest London.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, there was a thing, which is that when I was 6 and my hair fell out, you don't want to be defined by that. You know, look, there's the bald kid. And, you know, people point at you and you've got no hair and all that. And so you don't want that to be the thing that people know you for. And it was the same about being gay or even being fat or being Jewish. I thought, I don't want any one of those things to be, oh, he's that guy. So in Little Britain, which was were kind of the real breakthrough for me, I suppose the characters I played, the guy in the wheelchair, Fat Fighters, the only gay in the village, they were all different kind of characters, Vicky Pollard, that I got known for.
Yeah. And that to some extent, these were, and I know you've spoken about this in interviews before, that all of these characters required like quite elaborate costumes. They required dressing up and
makeup,
putting on a new persona and makeup as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm like a lot of people in that, and I've said this before, but I'm quite a sedentary man. But if you want me to run, just put a mirror and I'll run right past it. You know, I'm not one of those people who likes to look at myself particularly. Uh-huh. Or, you know, so dressing up for me was liberating and escapism, and it was good. I always thought, oh, I'm better as a character than I am as myself. I feel more confident, knew my place in the world, you know. Also, it just sometimes I need to behave badly. I'm one of those people, and dressing up, having a camera or an audience legitimizes and justifies and encourages that kind of behavior. And so for me, it was, and I think I would say for David, it was an outlet as well of an expression that we needed to make.
Same as being an Arsenal fan.
Yes, very much
so. To some degree. We've got a very young audience who watch this show.
Hi, kids!
In America, they say, what's the secret of life? A life lesson that you, Matt Lucas, have learned that you would pass on.
Yeah, I wouldn't know the secret. A life lesson. Somebody once told me you meet everyone twice. I mean, there's a brilliant old joke that this comedian, Malcolm Harder, used to do it. But
it's from my neck of the woods, down in Blackheath.
A British comedian who's passed away, but I don't think Malcolm wrote it. I think it was written by a comedian called Michael Redmond. And he used to say, say you're playing, I don't know, name a venue.
Brixton Academy.
Yeah, so he'd go, he'd walk out and he'd say, you only play Brixton Academy twice in your career, once on the way up, once on the way down. Great to be back. and I think you meet everyone twice, so just be careful. Just be careful who you meet on the way up, because you will need them on the way down.
Yeah.
Because life is peaks and troughs, absolutely. And like in my business, some of the shows I've done have been gone stratospheric, and some of them have just plummeted. And you just have to think, when you're up there, don't think this is it forever. And when you're down there, don't think this is it forever.
We've only had the downs. We can't wait for the up. We are honoured to have you in here.
Thank you so
much.
Nice
to get out of the house, to be honest.
Oh, we really are.
Pompidou, Rog. I can't believe anybody who's watched the whole thing, they've not already gone and become addicted to Pompidou.
It's the most British show you will see. It's like Peaky Blinders, but with more violence.
It's odd. It's an odd, very unusual comedy show. But if you stick with it, it rewards you.
That's so true. And those of you at home who are shouting out, does it have any animatronic dogs?
It does. It's a puppet, actually.
It's on Netflix.
Animatronic. Matt Lucas.
Go and watch it now, please.
Loved him, Rod.
Oh, what an amazing man. And almost human for an Arsenal fan.
Yeah.
Almost.
Yeah. That video is going to be up on nbcsports.com/MIB later this week. We also recently posted a video with US Women's National Team veteran Heather O'Reilly. Check them both out. Okay, on to the Ravens.
Hey-o.
Our first Raven is from Chase Hawkins.
American.
Great American name.
I don't think you even need a passport when you've got a name like that. You just
My name is Chase Hawkins. Yeah. Oh, come on in. Come on in.
Chase Hawkins.
Chase Hawkins.
You're one of ours. Get in here. You're one of ours.
Private eye.
I'm Roger Bennett. Sorry, mate.
Long time listener, first time caller. How in the World Cup do we get men to care about the results of a woman's sporting event? I can't even coax my friends to the bar to cheer on the US women. When I attempt to get them out, I always get some variation of the same excuse. I just don't really care about women's soccer.
New friends, mate.
Am I just being impatient? Will it all be okay in the end? Could it be said that Solo and Co. are just the women's answer to Donovan? Great when no one cared, but real legends in the end. Will we stop caring about them after the World Cup? Will the older players just fade away? Will FIFA 16 create for young men an awareness of how good they really are? Or will it just serve to get more young girls to buy their game? Please help me change the minds of young men and let them see the US women as I do. P.S. Love you, Rog, but go Chelsea. Oh, one of mine, Rog.
New friends, mate.
Yeah.
New friends. That's what you need.
So what do you think?
I thought about it a little bit. I think, I mean, what draws us to football, Davo, is narrative. And narrative needs characters. And the women's game is full of them. If you spend time with the players, they're remarkable. The coverage of them is always, of the women's game, is always very earnest. But their characters have to be framed. And I think the US women's team, it's still largely a collective of great athletes, but they're not really, as individuals, anywhere close to being in the firmament of popular culture. And to some extent, we're in Fox's hands to do that framing. I wish they'd done a Hard Knocks-style documentary running into the World Cup, like the one that I was able to do for the US.
Couple of filmmakers who could have made that really well, Rog.
Yeah, I mean, what that does is help you know the team before they take the field.
Yeah.
As individuals, what do you think?
Well, it's what Matt Lucas was talking about in the podcast. Why it's difficult watching international soccer sometimes, because you don't know the narrative of the people being involved. I agree. I think the coverage is all a bit earnest, and I think women's soccer, to be honest, is still a bit earnest.
when it doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be defensive about itself. It doesn't always have to be a national referendum on the future of women's sport. I'm sure that the athletes are very tired of it as well. Look, you and I, frankly, we've spoken about it. We probably could be up there. We could be making a weekly comedy show about it. But I think it's a little bit too early to be doing comedy about the Women's World Cup. It would be difficult to be funny about all the time. I'm not sure that anybody would take those jokes very, very well. But there is a lot to love about the US Women's National Team. There is a lot to truly respect and love about what is going on in women's soccer. There's no other women's team sport that's anywhere near where women's football is. And we've already seen some teams of remarkable skill and some individual performance of just like just sheerly, sheerly impressive.
I mean, we adore it. And we've got a case of the World Cup fever. I do think the EA Sports FIFA news, the game will feature the women's national team squads of 12 of the teams in the next iteration, the US foremost amongst them. It's going to be a massive step. I can't tell you how many Americans have been won over, say, to the Premier League by playing FIFA. Mark Stein wrote a great piece about how many NBA stars have become addicted to soccer through that game. But the biggest takeaway from the game last night, David, was that I realised 96% of Americans were tuning into the Women's World Cup for the first time and realising this is not being played on grass. It was a real WTF moment if you looked on Twitter.
Yeah.
And I love women's football, but to see its biggest tournament played on the crap that they're playing on,
yeah,
it does the entire sport, every athlete in that tournament, a massive disservice. And the whole operation is in danger through no fault of its own. It just looks junior varsity with the little black kind of pebbly things flying up at every kick.
Yeah, they seem to be over-rubberized, Rog. The winner of the coveted Guinness Men in Blazers Poet, Philosopher, Sucker, Scribe, Raven of the Week is Brad Williams. Frankly, another also guy who doesn't need a passport. Dear Rog and Davo, any Brad. Really, Roger.
Brad.
This weekend, I arose early.
Is it possible to have a wimpy Brad?
I've never met an English Brad. Never met an English Brad.
Nope.
This weekend, I arose early as I usually do to enjoy some quiet time in the house before the family got up and the day started in earnest. I reached for the remote and had the TV on before I remembered. We are but 1/11th of the way through the Premier League off-season, and that doesn't reduce. Well, it reduces fans to tears. I ended up, I ended up turning on Love Boat reruns to accompany my Sunday coffee and newspaper. I began following the Premier League in earnest during the 2011-12 season. I will never forget that last day, full of Man City fans despairing and then rejoicing, giddy with two improbable stoppage time goals to wrest the title away from Man U, heady times. After three more seasons, I begin to feel that I will never have access to that sort of emotion myself. I cannot seem to attach myself to a team. I won't jump on the bandwagon for any of the big teams. I can't muster any more than a casual connection to the mid-table stalwarts. And let's face it, falling in love with the season's new arrivals is more risk than any fan should take on. I'm looking at you, Burnley. I end up watching games that I think will have a good storyline. Games with relegation implications are a favourite, but I'll watch a game where a friend has a rooting interest or where a player I like is playing, or perhaps a big derby game. It just depends. At the end of this season, it finally occurred to me that I do have a favourite team, and that team is narrative. I do understand and experience the emotions that are available to soccer fans as I'm a stalwart backer of the US men's national team. Von Trapps! I only mentioned that to let you know that I'm not soulless or incapable of feeling emotion. Thank you very much. Always important to remind particular Roger of that fact. I see it this way. I may enjoy a victory, but I don't really celebrate it. Conversely, losses may be unfortunate, but they are rarely sad nap-inducing. How common do you think this is to feel passion for the league without a deep connection to a single team? Good question. Is it possible that the Premier League writers prefer it this way?
This is a fascinating question, David. We were chatting about that this week a little bit. I actually think Brad may be highly evolved.
Yeah.
Like a human being born without an appendix or wisdom teeth. Because with social media and EA Sports FIFA, the future, I don't mean to be rude to both of us who are both wedded to teams, it may not be team-driven. Soccer fans may follow the narrative of individual players and transfer their affections as the player moves from one team to another. Say George Boyd, David. Let's pick him.
Love. We both love George Boyd.
Yeah, he caught our eye. You fall in love with Burnley. Yeah. And then maybe, say, in the off-season, he goes to Bournemouth. You follow Bournemouth. Boyd's Bournemouth.
Yeah.
And then Spurs when he moves there. And then Chelsea when he stars there the season after. And then when he moves to Real Madrid, George Boyd, Jorge Boyd.
Yeah.
In the future, we may all be like you, Brad. We may be a future where so we are all
following
great.
The individuals over. Eden Hazard is a player I love. I would follow any team that Eden Hazard went to, or not follow. I would want. I would be desirous of watching that team. I would be excited to see him do well wherever he went
I'm yet to
played.
Follow one that he's played for.
Yeah,
not one.
You used to like Belgium before they knocked the US out of the World Cup. You used to be partial to Belgium. You were cheering for Belgium when we went and saw them play against Russia before they ended up playing the US in that World Cup. You always liked the Belgians.
That was more Russia, David.
Your week, I don't think you are, Rog. Your weekend looks like this, as we mentioned, USA versus Sweden from Canada, 8 p.m. Friday on the Fox Network. An intriguing
American
game
States United.
In Group D of Euro 2016 qualifying, Rog. Euro 2016 qualifying. We knocked the new format where so many teams qualify into this 24-team format. And yet, there are some really interesting games over the next few months. Ireland versus Scotland. That's at noon Saturday. That's streaming on Fox.
Should be played with pickaxes,
Soccer
that game.
To go.
Just let them go at each other.
That's on Fox Soccer to go, Rod. In NMLS, Orlando City versus DC United, 7 p.m. Sunday on Fox Sports 1. We announced last week on the pod, Rog, we're heading to Spain this summer to cover the running of the Bulls for Esquire Network. We're actually looking for GFOPs who've run with the Bulls before to speak with us a little bit about their experience. We want to put you on camera. Email us, please, if you've run with the Bulls or one of your great friends, family members has run with the Bulls, might be willing to speak to us at meninblazers@gmail.com. Many ways to connect to us. One is at Amazon Emporium. Helps keep the show going. Anytime you go on Amazon, Frightens Big or Small, just click off the Emporium page. And Men in Blazers gets a tiny percentage that allows us to cover the cost of creating the show. What are you putting into the Emporium this week, Rog?
A book. Not a game.
Yeah.
The Incredible Rise and Unthinkable Fall of Allen Iverson by Kent Babb.
Oh.
Anyone who watched Iverson in his prime.
Yeah.
And I'd often drive down to the then, I think it was called First Union Bank Centre, to watch him weave through at light speed through massive opponents. Mm-hmm. At the time, his brand was authenticity, staying true to himself, refusing to conform.
Huh.
And the book reveals, often brutally, tales of his violence towards his wife, kids, alcoholism, and general pig-headedness.
Mm-hmm.
And you realise there's a thin line, as there is in any relationship, between being authentic and being stubborn, cold-hearted, selfish, and ultimately self-destructive. I'd say this is an amazing book, not just for basketball fans, but for anyone interested in the human cost of our need to make myths, sporting myths, have idols, sporting idols, and disconnect their image from their reality.
Mm-hmm. Received this yesterday in the mail, Rog, cracked open the wrapping, and I'm going to start my lessons in earnest this night. Total Spanish Revised, Learn Spanish with the Michelle Thomas Method. That's a Hodder Education publication. A bargain at $69.80, Rog. This guy, Michelle Thomas, he's a middle European language teacher who just believes that you can learn any language by just learning some core modal verbs, about 100 words of vocabulary, and learning the words that are sort of the same in English as in Spanish. I'm pretty sure that by the time we get off the plane in Barcelona, I'm going to be going and ordering you coffee, buying you flowers, and doing it all in Spanish. I'm pretty confident.
How would you say obrigado in Spanish?
Don't have any idea how to say anything obrigado, in Spanish mate. Yet, but starting tonight, I'm on the
That's
way
all
to fluency.
I need. Obrigado, Rog. Mate.
Rock on. Okay, other ways to connect to us. We recently released Men in Blazers Unbuttoned. Now that's what I call Suboptimal Volume 2, the best of 2014. On iTunes, Amazon and Google Play, it's the most suboptimal moments from a year in which Liverpool nearly won the league.
What?
And the USA nearly won the World Cup. Have a listen and then a sad nap. We've got a Spotify account, Rog. Men_in_Blazers. Our mixtape for the Women's World Cup is now up. Listen to that as you watch US Women's National Team or the Matildas. Rog, I think they won some new fans last night. Meninblazers.wickerspaces.com/. That's a wonder of the modern world. Well, Meninblazers.com. You can sign up for our newsletter there, The Raven, which we produce with our partner
Guinness.
It's coming
out this week.
Follow us on Twitter at Embassy Davies, at Rog Bennett, at Men in Blazers. On Instagram at Men in Blazers, at Embassy_Davies. We've also got a Facebook. We've got a subreddit, meninblazers.reddit.com, maintained by GFOPs Akshay, Calvin, and Alex. You can always send your ravens to the crap part of Soho. You can always email us at meninblazers@gmail.com. Vendorpunk Rog.
War Pig.
Who wants to sex Matombo?
Explosion.
Courage.
Take that, Gloria.
Is that your analysis?
Lean to linen.
Abracadabra. Rock on, mate.
Kung Fu Fighting America. American States United. Watch out, Pia Sundhager.
Love you, Rog.
Love you, Davo.
Jink.